It took Madrigal a while to control himself and find his voice.
"You're dead,"
he whispered, pain making the words quiver and shake.
"You gutless little swine, you're dead. Uncle will kill you for this."
My half-brother smiled and worked the action of the shotgun again. "I doubt my father cares," he replied. "He wouldn't mind losing a nephew, particularly not one who's been consorting with scum like House Malvora." "Aha," I said quietly, putting two and two together. "Now I get it. He's like them."
"Like what?" Thomas asked.
"A phobophage," I said quietly. "He feeds on fear, the way you feed on lust." Thomas's expression turned a bit nauseated.
"Yes, a lot of the Malvora do."
Madrigal's pale, strained face twisted into a vicious smile.
"You should try it some night, cuz."
"It's sick, Mad," Thomas said. There was an almost ghostly sense of sadness or pity in his tone, so subtle that I would not have seen it before living with him. Hell, I doubt he realized it was there himself.
"It's sick, and it's made you sick."
"You feed on mortal desires for the little death," Madrigal said, his eyes half closing. "I feed on their desire for the real thing. We both feed. In the end, we both kill. There's no difference."
"The difference is that once you've started, you can't let them go running off to report you to the authorities," Thomas said. "You keep them until they're dead."
Madrigal let out a laugh, unsettling for how genuine it sounded, given his situation. I got the sneaking suspicion that the vampire was a couple of peeps short of an Easter basket.
"Thomas, Thomas," Madrigal murmured. "Always the self-righteous little bleeding heart. So concerned for the bucks and toes, as though you never tasted them yourself, never killed them yourself."
Thomas's expression went opaque again, but his eyes were flat with sudden anger. Madrigal's smile widened at the response. His teeth shone white in the evening's gloom.
"I've been feeding well. Whereas you, well, without your dark-eyed whore to take you without warning,"
without a flicker of expression on Thomas's face, the shotgun roared again, and the blast took Madrigal across the knees. More two-pale blood spattered the gravel.
Holy crap.
Madrigal went prone again, body arching in agony, the pain choking his scream down to an anemic little echo of a real shriek. Thomas planted his boot on Madrigal's neck, his expression cold and calm, but for the glittering rage in his eyes. He pumped the next shell in and held the shotgun in one hand, shoving the barrel against Madrigal's cheekbone. Madrigal froze, quivering in agony, eyes wide and desperate.
"Never," Thomas murmured very quietly, "ever speak of Justine."
Madrigal said nothing, but my instincts screamed again. Something in the way he held himself, something in his eyes, told me that he was acting. He'd maneuvered the conversation to Justine deliberately. He was playing on Thomas's feelings for Justine, distracting us. I spun to see Glau on his feet, just as though he hadn't been given a lethal dose of buckshot in the chest from 10 feet away. He shot across the parking lot at a full sprint, running for the van parked about 50 feet away. He ran in utter silence, without the crunch of gravel or the creak of shoes, and for a second I thought I saw maybe an inch and a half of space between where he planted his running feet and the ground.